From the jaws of victory, the triumph and tragedy of Cesar Chavez and the farm worker movement is a history of the rise and decline of United Farm Workers, the most successful farm labor union in United States history. Matt Garcia is professor of transborder studies and history at Arizona State University, where he also directs the School of Historical, Philosophical, and Religious Studies and the program in Comparative Border Studies. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Professor Matt Garcia to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on, Joe.
Again, the name of the book, From the Jaws of Victory, The Triumph and Tragedy of Cesar Chavez and the Farm Worker Movement. What brought you to this particular topic?
Well, I've studied farm labor, and also I'm from a farm worker family. And so, you know, I'm just continuing with work that I've done for my entirety of my career. But this particular story, I was interested in understanding why conditions in the fields today are no better than they were when the farm worker movement started, given all that we know about Cesar Chavez and the United Farm Workers and what they seemingly accomplished in the 60s and 70s. And so that was the real underlying reason for doing this book.
One of the things that is striking is how complex the story is. It is not simple when you think of this man and what he accomplished.
Yeah, most stories of Cesar Chavez up through very recently a campaign for president, President Obama named the headquarters of the UFW at La Paz as a national monument. And so these stories have been a celebration of the United Farm Workers, and Cesar Chavez in particular. But what I found in my research is that he was a far more complex person who, in the end, made some bad decisions, particularly in the mid-70s, that doomed the union to become really more of an advocacy group today than a bona fide union.
What led him down that path of obviously there were, and you note this in the book, some incredible individuals who helped him in making the organization succeed. But there were also some things going on, especially toward the end, as you note, that were undoing as much as it was bringing this group together.
Yeah, the creation of the union and the maintenance of the union was a careful balance of Chavez's great leadership and vision, balanced with taking counsel from people that were far more inexperienced than him, but came from different walks of life. So he got students, he got lawyers, he got ministers, all of which he had to listen to. And then he had in the ranks of the workers, mostly Filipinos and Mexicans joining together, and then age groups from elderly to very, very young students. So he was trying to manage all of this. And at some point in the mid-70s, and I document that point, it's 1975-76, he begins to really distrust all of those voices and wants to limit them to just his voice controlling the whole thing.
You use, obviously, the infamous Great Boycott is something that you write about in the book, and it is something that I think is a wonderful crystallization as to much of the story that you're telling here and what happened. This was an event that ultimately, in many cases, made this guy a household name. But as you point out, while there is a popular perception that this is something that was carried out primarily by Mexicans and Filipinos, that the coalition that was brought together for this was incredibly broad.
And it's what made the farm workers movement unique. In the late 60s, when Students for a Democratic Society were breaking off into splinter groups like the Weather Underground and becoming more violent and blowing themselves up, and when the Black Civil Rights Movement became more exclusive of other voices other than African Americans becoming black, activism for blacks only. The farm workers movement was a big tent organization. It kept that good feeling of the 1960s running well into the mid 70s. And you know, that was pretty much brought together by the boycott. The boycott was this amazing network of information that spread across the globe. Initially, it was just North America, spanning into Canada, but then eventually went to England. And by 1970, they achieved the first contracts for farm workers in California. And then by 1975, the Agricultural Labor Relations Act, which was known as the best labor law in the country in California, that gave farm workers collective bargaining rights for the first time.
And that is incredible. In 5 years, going from no movement whatsoever to these first contracts for farm workers in the state of California, which really is amazing.
Yeah, it was an incredible thing that had been a long time coming. You know, farm workers had been shut out of collective bargaining rights in the 1935 Wagner Act, the National Labor Relations Act. And so this is what Cesar Chavez was trying to achieve, and that broad coalition was trying to achieve. It achieved it by law in California. We still don't have that nationally. But what they achieved was the blueprint for the nation that was never fulfilled because of the missteps of Chavez in the mid-70s.
Give us an idea, and I'm hoping you can explain this. You write about it wonderfully in the book, but it is something that's difficult to explain quickly. His intent to turn United Farm Workers into an intentional community. What is an intentional community, and what ultimately was he trying to do?
Well, I think the best shorthand way to understand the intentional community is it's a commune, a group of believers that live in one place that believe in usually one religion. And in fact, this was happening throughout the country, but especially in the West and especially in California. Think about Jim Jones and the People's Temple. We think about Reverend Moon and the Moonies. But there was one group that he was following and one man that he was modeling his particular efforts after, and that was Chuck Dietrich, who created Synanon. Synanon was a drug rehabilitation center that was created in the late 50s. It had great success through the 1960s and became incredibly wealthy. But by 1974, Chuck Dietrich had concentrated into a few places in California. One is called Home Place, and it had become a religion where he had all the women shave their heads, all the men get vasectomies, and at some point dissolved marriages and then reunited people according to his whims. What Chavez liked about this model is it gave Chuck Dietrich complete control. And in 1975-76, when the farm workers movement was essentially becoming a legal movement, right? It was collective bargaining rights were being recognized by the state of California. The movement was being handed over largely to lawyers, and Chavez didn't like that. He felt like it was slipping out of his hands. He was losing that control. And so he was really seeking the control, the same kind of control that these kind of quasi-religious figures like Chuck Dietrich had in a communal setting. And that place was La Paz, the headquarters that, as I said, has recently been called, named a national monument by our president.
So in your opinion, what prevented Chavez from turning the UFW into a cult-like organization?
Well, I argue that it was the boycott, actually. The boycott had served its purpose by 1975. It had realized a lot of the goals, collective bargaining rights, and it was no longer, you know, that lever of power to get more. But what it did was it created this network of people across the globe who were looking at La Paz and watching all the things that were going on there. And as Chavez started taking it down this direction, right, of a commune, and some people called it a cult, they started to write in and question it and challenge him and write into progressive newspapers and even mainstream newspapers and brought light to this kind of situation. So it was actually through that process that people within the inner circle said that the boycott itself prevented us from becoming a cult.
And there, and then there became, and I guess some of the members of the Inner Circle told you this, that they there became a sort of checks and balances of sorts.
Yeah, but unfortunately, they weren't checks and balances that could save the union from not being a union anymore, from
right.
not following through on all the things that they had achieved up to that point. What it simply did was it checked Chavez from really making himself the kind of Chuck Dietrich or the religious figure, and the and La Paz a type of place that other communes were fated to become in the late 70s and early 80s when they lost their way. In fact, all we have to do is look at Jim Jones and the tragedy in Guyana to understand how far it could have gone.
Is it? It's Gilbert Padilla. Is that how that name is pronounced?
Yes, that's right.
Who is Cesar Chavez's right hand man? And you state in the book that really a guy who deserves as much recognition as Chavez for starting the movement.
Absolutely, Gil is someone other than Dolores Huerta, who's the other person that's often mentioned, is someone who is a living founder. Today, he was there when Cesar Chavez made the move from a community service organization, CSO, to create what would become the United Farm Workers in 1961, 1962. He saw it all the way through to the dark days of purgings in the mid-70s when people didn't follow Chavez. And he, you know, has had a kind of realization of consciousness of he wants the story to be told. And so he's been instrumental in really bringing people to the table and talking about this situation. And it's because of him that this book is largely written.
You started our discussion by talking about how the problem remains and of what with the UFW coming and going, of what has been the result ultimately and where we are now. So where do we go from here? What do we learn from this story that will help these men and women?
Well, I think first we need to get a consciousness about the conditions of our workers. And I mean, not just the field workers, but people throughout our food chain, including grocery store workers, including all the people that pack and present the food that we eat. There's been a real slippage of consciousness about that, even as we have this food justice movement today. So oftentimes we get books about how our diet affects the planet and
right.
how our buying affects our bodies. But I want us to focus on how our buying affects people who are actually in that food chain network. So there's a great organization called the Food Chain Workers Alliance, which is bringing consciousness to this problem. And I think the boycott in my book demonstrates that we can get back to a place where consumers are conscious of workers. They're not simply buying according to their own bodies or the planet, which are worthy goals, but also can buy in such a way that it helps the situation for workers.
What's fascinating to me is that, and I say this a lot in the show, and it's a question that I ask a lot because I just don't get it. There was a time where we were mad as hell and we weren't going to take it anymore. And it seems that when you look at the situation now and you read this book and your blood boils and you say, okay, well, if not now, when? And so to take your answer of what it's going to take to create another boycott or to take another a rising up from within and this consciousness so that people get active and you have brave men and women who offer some protections to these farm workers, you know, what else is it going to take?
I think we have to marshal the tools that we have in modern society. I think what we have to do is look at the boycott and understand exactly what it was. It was a lot of work, but at its essence, it was a network of information. And we have the capacity to distribute the information we know that's going on in the fields today faster and more efficiently than that boycott, that network. We have it in smartphones. We have it in internet technology. And that's something that I'm working on, an app that I'm calling Just Food, which essentially takes the information that great organizations like the Southern Poverty and Law Center that recently studied H2 workers in the field found that they're working in the condition, quote, close to slavery, take that information and put it in the hands of consumers so that we can create, I would say recreate, the consciousness that we had in the 60s and 70s about the conditions in our fields.
The name of the book is From the Jaws of Victory, The Triumph and Tragedy of Cesar Chavez and the Farm Worker Movement. Matt Garcia, thank you very much for spending time with us. A great pleasure to have you share your expertise.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you so much. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.